Well, the first thing that I have to say is how fantastic it is for Judy and I to be back here with you at St. A's. It's 9 years, of course, since we left in 2013. And we always remember our time here in Cambridge with great affection and thanksgiving. So we're really delighted to be back here with you. Thank you so much for the invitation. Now, some of you will know that a couple of weeks ago, Helen, who is our middle daughter, got married in Bournemouth. And as you would expect, my job as the father of the bride was to escort her down into the church to the front to stand next to her new husband. And because I had to do that, I missed out on what Judy later described as one of the highlights of the day. Now, what I missed out on was actually Jojo, who is our grandson, who is now 4, being escorted into the church by Lizzie, who is our granddaughter, one of our granddaughters, who is 14. And as they walked into the church as part of the bridal party, a friend of Helen's, who is a missionary in Japan, called Catherine, who is also a professional harpist, she had recorded on her harp the tune of Amazing Grace to accompany the folk into the church as a part of the bridal party. So just to give you a quick taste, I do hope that maybe a short video of Jojo and Lizzie entering the church will come up. Now, as I say, I missed it. I've seen it now on the film, but at the actual time, I missed it. And when you miss out on something, it can be really frustrating, can't it? So somebody may say to you, did you see the solar eclipse the other night? It was spectacular. Oh, no. No, I didn't. Now I missed it. Or somebody else might say, you know, there's been this amazing wildlife program on the TV. Have you seen it? Oh, no, I didn't know anything about it. And so it goes on. Something really significant has been missed. Well, last Sunday, I think, was actually the most special and wonderful day in the entire year. Easter Sunday has always been, I think, my favorite day. The day when we celebrate the fact that Jesus rose from the dead, the day when death was finally defeated, the day when Jesus demonstrated his wonderful power and his great authority. But poor old Thomas, he missed it. John 20, verse 24. Now, Thomas, also known as Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. Now, we don't know why Thomas wasn't there, but one thing we do know is that the disciples made quite a big thing of it. So in verse 21, we have the other disciples told him, well, we've seen the Lord. As if poor old Thomas hadn't. Fancy missing out on something as earth-shattering and wonderful. And we can understand, I think, why Thomas found it really difficult to believe this. He probably thought it was some kind of unkind joke made against him. And as we know, though, a week later, the equivalent of today, Jesus appeared to Thomas, and he was convinced. Verse 28, Thomas said to him, my Lord and my God. And then we have for me what I think are some of the most surprising but the most wonderful words that we have recorded in the gospel, where Jesus says to Thomas in John 20, verse 29, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Now, you would expect, wouldn't you, the words be the other way round. You would think that the people who are really blessed are the people who've seen and come to understand that Jesus is alive, who've been able to witness such a miraculous event. But no, those who are truly blessed, says Jesus, are those who have not seen and yet believed. And taking this into our own present day, it's very easy for us, isn't it, to think that those who are really blessed are the people who've had an amazing experience of God, who've had some kind of vision, who've been blessed in a way that goes beyond our kind of understanding, and we think they're the blessed ones. But no, it seems from these words the opposite is the case. Those who are truly blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. So on this first Sunday after Easter, I'd like to just consider with you for a little while why the invisible Jesus is actually better than a physical and visible Jesus. And the first point I want to make is that visible presence is limited, invisible presence is unlimited. Let's just think about this for a moment from Thomas's point of view. And here, I hope, is a picture of Thomas as he meets with Jesus in what must have been an overwhelming experience. And as you look at the picture there, you can see that Thomas is also in the presence of his friends, the disciples. And then Jesus, he stands there among them. The doors are locked, but suddenly Jesus appears. He's there. And I'm sure that Thomas would never have ever forgotten this amazing day. But then at some point, Jesus leaves. And Thomas is left there with his friends. And then, probably a bit later, the disciples themselves would have gone their separate ways, or Thomas may have left. So Thomas is now on his own. There's nobody there with him anymore. And that is the nature, isn't it, of physical people being with you. They cannot be with us all the time. At some point, these people, however close they may be to us, they have to leave. They will go to another place. Their visible presence will be with us no longer. The invisible presence of Jesus is not limited in this way. Because he is spiritual and invisible, he can be with us wherever we are, whatever we are doing, however we may feel. Not only that, but he's able to be present here with us now in Cambridge. He's also able to be present with my family in Sheffield and with people throughout the entire world. He is present with all those people. And such universal availability would be impossible, wouldn't it, if Jesus was still physically present on the earth. And we are blessed, richly blessed, because Jesus is always with us. Even when we are physically alone, we are not alone. Now, this may be an obvious point, but nonetheless, I think it is one that we must never, ever forget. The invisible spiritual presence of Jesus is much better than the visible physical presence of Jesus. We may feel sometimes that if we are alone, we are isolated. Our friends have gone. Our family are no longer around us. We may feel abandoned. The truth is that Jesus is always with us. As he told the disciples in Matthew 28, verse 20, surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. There is no place where Jesus cannot be found. There is no situation into which he cannot be part of. There is no depth that he is unable to reach. The invisible, unlimited presence of Jesus really is an immense blessing. The second blessing is that the visible presence is external, invisible presence is internal. Some years ago, I read an amazing book called Pain, The Gift Nobody Wants. The book was written by a man called Dr. Paul Brand in conjunction with the famous writer Philip Yancey. And Paul Brand was an orthopedic surgeon, and he had spent his entire working life working amongst people who suffered from leprosy, and who, because of the disease of leprosy, they couldn't feel pain in their bodies. And because they couldn't feel pain, their bodies became very severely damaged by that, and hence the title, the pain, the gift that nobody wants. But one of the points that Paul Brand makes in his book is that you cannot feel somebody else's pain. You may try to sympathize with their pain, you may help to alleviate it, but actually it's their pain. So, for example, a child falls over and they bash their knee. The poor child yells in pain and anguish, and you give them a cuddle, you gently wash their wound, you speak words of comfort and assurance, but the pain, the actual pain in the knee, is theirs. It is theirs alone. We cannot feel it at that moment ourselves. I think it's probably true of other kinds of pain. As with physical pain, I don't think we can go deep inside somebody else's heart and life and personally experience what they are feeling or fearing. We are limited, aren't we, by our very physical existence. This is something that I have recognized many, many times when I used to be a minister, and I would go and visit people who were facing pain, and I would sit there. And perhaps they were facing grief or loss. And perhaps I would remember how my father died at the age of 61, very suddenly, and on Judy, my wife's birthday. And I know the grief that I felt at that time. And I can seek to empathize and try to understand the grief that another person is feeling. But I cannot at that moment feel their grief. Their grief is theirs, and everybody I came to understand experiences grief anyway in a very different way. So as with physical pain, so we cannot actually feel the pain of another person. Now, the wonderful truth about Jesus is that because he's not limited by his physical presence, he can get inside. And he can enter our hearts and our minds. And being invisible and spiritual, he is able to enter into our deepest emotions, our joys, our fears, our longings. And he is able to bring his love and his blessing into those places. Last Sunday, I don't know if any of you watched Songs of Praise, but last Sunday on Songs of Praise, they interviewed a young woman who was on an Easter pilgrimage to Holy Island in Northumberland. And this young woman described how she had had a very, very difficult upbringing, and she had faced very, very painful experiences in her early life. And she said how she used to envy people who had faith, because somehow, she said, this faith had eluded her. And she then went on to describe the day when she had a profound experience of Christ. And she put it in terms of saying she felt as if she was surrounded and embraced by the love of Christ. And then she said these words that I thought were amazing. She said, for the first time in my life, I felt that I was understood completely. And that's what Jesus is able to bring into our lives. That is what the invisible presence of Jesus can do. He can enter deeply into our hearts and lives. He can bring his love and his understanding to bear at every level of our experience so that we are totally understood by him. The third thing that the way in which we are blessed, I think, is that visible presence would demand belief. Invisible presence calls for loving trust. Now, you could, argue that poor old Thomas has no choice. And if we imagine his situation, he sees Jesus standing in front of him. He's encouraged to put his finger into the hands of Jesus and feel the scars. He puts his hand into the side of Jesus and feels where the spear went as Jesus was crucified. And having done that, Thomas can't do anything else but believe. People sometimes say, don't they, that seeing is believing. And there is some truth in that. I remember, and maybe some of you remember this, that when I was a minister here, I sometimes did a children's talk in which I used to take a fork and a spoon. And I used to say to the children, do you believe that I can take this fork and this spoon and with using just a tiny match, I can balance the two of them on the edge of a glass? And they used to say, no. That's impossible. How can you do that? And then I would demonstrate, and this picture shows just a little bit how it's done, that you put the spoon and the fork together, and you put the little match in them, and they balance amazingly on the glass. Now, the point I want to make is that when you've seen that, you have to believe it. You can't say, oh, well, I saw Dave doing that, but I still don't believe it's possible. No, you have to believe it. You have no choice in the matter. You need to believe it. We have to believe that it's possible. But in contrast, we can't see Jesus in that way. So in a sense, because we can't see Jesus, we have more choice. We could consider the amazing events of Easter and decide that it's all nonsense. Or we can see the events as a wonderful truth. That Jesus really is alive, that death truly has been defeated. And it seems to me that true belief always carries with it an element of uncertainty, of not having ultimate proof. And that actually this is particularly so when you think about personal relationships. Let me just give a fairly obvious example. Suppose a friend of yours is accused of stealing from the workplace. And the evidence against them seems really solid. But your friend says, I didn't do it. It's a put-up job. I'm innocent. I want you to believe me. And you have to weigh up in your mind, the knowledge you have of your friend makes you think that, yeah, that's probably true. They probably didn't do it. But you cannot be certain. There has to be some element of doubt. You don't know the complete picture. But as you weigh it up, you decide you will trust your friend. And you say, yes, I do trust you. I believe in your integrity. And then your friend is exonerated. It is found and proved beyond doubt that your friend actually is innocent. And what happens then? And that is your relationship with your friend is greatly enhanced. Why? Because you trusted them. You trusted them even though there was not 100% certainty. Still, you believed in that person. And I think something similar holds true for us if we are prepared to trust in Christ despite the fact that we cannot see him or touch him. I sometimes wonder if Thomas ever regretted the fact that he needed cast iron proof before he would believe. Now we know, don't we, that Jesus isn't going to suddenly appear. And he's not going to twist our arms behind our back and say, okay, you believe in me. It's about time you did. He's not going to do that. The choice is ours. And the blessing is ours when we do trust in that which we cannot see. And it is a blessing because such trust really does deepen our relationship with Christ. Now, I think this is something that we particularly need to remember and is particularly relevant and important when we're going through a difficult time. It may be that we are facing a period in our lives and we just cannot understand what on earth is God doing. Every time I pray about it, nothing happens. It seems to me that God has abandoned me. He is remote, he is distant, my prayers aren't getting anywhere. Everything is just getting worse and worse, and I do not understand what is going on. And at these times, it's really important that we recognize how vital it is that we trust, even when we cannot see. And to know that those who continue to trust, even in the darkness, are actually more blessed than those who only trust when everything's going well and they can see the hand of God at work and everything is marvellous and wonderful and seems to be easy for them to see it. How blessed are those who cannot see and yet still believe. Jesus said a number of things which, on the face of it, do seem to be rather surprising. One of those is recorded for us in John 16, verse 7, where Jesus says this, "But very truly I tell you, it is for your good that I'm going away." Now, the disciples had found themselves to love and to depend upon Jesus, and they must have found this really, really confusing. How could Jesus leaving them be described as good? But Jesus continues, "Unless I go away, the Advocate will not come to you. But if I go, I will send him to you." What Jesus is doing here is recognizing that the coming of the Advocate, the Holy Spirit, would bring even greater blessing to his people than his continued physical presence among them. It is better for you that I go away. We have a very similar thing here on the first Sunday after the resurrection, when Thomas would have been thrilled and overwhelmed to meet with the risen Christ, yet Jesus recognized that an even greater blessing lay in store for future generations who, unlike Thomas, would not see him face to face, would not be able to reach out their hands and put it in to his side. And so Jesus said, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." The blessings of not actually being able to see Jesus must never be underestimated. The blessing of Jesus' presence with us not being limited by space or time. The blessing of receiving the living Christ into our hearts, knowing that he understands us fully and shares with us in our innermost thoughts, fears, and longings. And the blessings of never being forced to believe in Jesus, but to enjoy a relationship of loving trust. Jesus, John concludes this great passage with the words of John 20, verse 31. "These are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name." May we know the life and the blessing that comes as we trust and believe in our invisible and yet very real Lord and Saviour.